Okay, I have to hook this up. I'm sorry I'm late, but we'll get going here. Okay, we'll talk about Bitcoin. You have various amounts of knowledge about this topic already. I'm sure it's pretty much always in the news and all that. So what is it? Or how is it built? There are several aspects to it. One is the technology, which is really crypto. And this part is quite easy to explain. It's just hash functions and signatures. That's all there is to it. But it's okay, there's hash functions and signatures, but what makes it, you know, money, currency, value? So there is this finance angle to this. So value, price, and then there is the social aspect to this. Why is it acceptable? And in fact, moment we talk about money, most of us don't even kind of know what does money mean. I mean, is money these notes that we carry around, or is it a number in a bank account that tells you you've got $3 in there, or is it a credit card? So there are, these are various forms of money, but what is money? So if you look at bank notes, actual currency printed by, it's pretty much they're printed by governments of countries, and countries, every country has a separate currency. Why can't we have, okay, that, there's enough politics involved in there, we cannot grapple with that. But what does this piece of paper, actually it's not paper, but whatever it is, say, or why do we have any kind of trust in it? Or so there are certain terms used. To me, it's all meaningless. That is, this note is legal tender. That's on certain currencies. The US currency says, I forget. This note, something about legal tender for all debts, public and private. Okay, what? And what's the value? Let's just talk about the US dollar. What's the value of a printed US dollar? Does the government actually guarantee a value to that? I know I'm digressing, not talking about crypto, but if it's a $1 note, its value is $1, or is it? You know, inflation or deflation, it goes up and down. But a $1 note will never become equal to 50 cents. It will still remain $1. So where are we getting this, and where does this money come from? It gets printed. Not really, because the fact that this paper money is a very, very tiny percentage of money. That's just one kind of, one media of money. So if we start talking about what is money, that's a whole different course on what is it. But a few things. As far as government issue, then the government says that these things have full faith and credit of the, let's say, U.S. government. Full faith and credit of the U.S. government. What does that mean? Like they have pots of gold sitting there? No. Even if they did, why is gold considered anything of value? Anything of value like, you know, a hammer, a pen, or it's because it's useful. Gold is not useful. I mean, yeah, jewelry, but that's just one particular form of it, and glitters and all that. But inherently, most gold is not made into jewelry. And so why do we keep these pieces of gold around? And there are historical reasons for that. So what is money? Money essentially is something that can be exchanged for goods and services. Who creates money? Anybody know who creates money? Is it created? It must be created. Printed by the mint. But that is a small part, so we can ignore the printed. Majority of the money exists in bank accounts, stocks, bonds, financial instruments, etc. So who creates this thing? And what is this stuff about monetary policy and fiscal policy? So to make it very simple, that's the shortest explanation I can give you. The first one sounds ridiculous. Banks create money. They do. And it's a system called fractional reserve banking. Banks can create lots and lots of money. The government sends monetary policy on which how much banks can create, because they can multiply money. And that's how money gets created. And then there is the consumer aspect to it. The more you spend, the velocity of money, and then it gets, the theory becomes a little complicated to explain. So if there's a lot of deposits in the bank, they loan it out. But if they loan it out, that money doesn't go anywhere. It comes back to the bank because it gets deposited in somebody's bank. And then they loan it out again, and that's how it multiplies. And you can't stop that. And everybody knows what's going on. And why does a US dollar have value? What's the value of a US dollar? The government says it's worth a dollar. What is a dollar? Well, you can go to a dollar store and buy something. As long as the dollar store is willing to give you that thing for $1, then that money is worth this thing from the dollar store. Okay? That's all there is to it. And they will give you the thing for a dollar because that's what they're selling it for, and that they believe that this piece of whether it's paper or credit card or whatever, has the value that we'll give it to you. So it's just a global or countrywide level of trust in this. So can we create money? If the banks can do it, well, yes, you can. Some of it is illegal, but yes, you can if you can come up with an artifact that people are willing to accept in lieu of goods and services, and they can take it and they can give it to somebody else, then you can. But if it's a physical object, it's illegal because you're creating money. If it's not a physical object, then it's not clear why can't you do it. And the simplest way of doing this is what we call cryptocurrency. And I'm going to talk about Bitcoin because that's the most common one. There's plenty. Anybody can make a cryptocurrency. And not surprisingly, it is a number. That's it. It's a number. So if I can take a number and attempt to sell it to you, will you buy it? Most likely no, it's a number. But in Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, especially Bitcoin, which is probably the highest valued currency out there in terms of crypto, these numbers have inherent price or value because people are willing to pay in some other form for this money. And maybe they'll pay in US dollars for this money. But it is this acceptance that creates the value, just like coins, notes, once upon a time it was some kind of pebbles and rocks and things like that. So anything that can be bartered is money. So can we have numbers? Now anybody can create any number of numbers. Numbers are easy, cheap, hence it has no value. But this number has certain properties. And has acceptance. And has verifiability. And that creates and it's difficult to generate. So that creates some level of barrier to entry that people say, okay, once you show me this number and I can verify it and I know other people will want it, then I can give you a TV or I can give you some money or currency, etc., etc. And that's how it kind of works. I don't know if that's believable or not. Okay, so what more can I add to this? What am I trying to say? That there are certain numbers that have value, that are accepted, can be verified, and why is it difficult to generate? That we've got to figure out why is it difficult to generate. So one such way of generating it in case of Bitcoin, the function used is SHA-256, and you get a hash, and the hash will have a certain number of zeros in it. That is a valuable number, because anybody can verify that its hash has a bunch of zeros in it. How many zeros? That is a published number that keeps changing, but you can look it up. It's called the Bitcoin threshold, and it'll tell you how many zeros have to be in a Bitcoin. And that's all. Does that make sense? So you know about the story of how Bitcoin came about. Yes? No? There's an 8-page paper, written paper, never published, nobody knows who wrote it. There's a name on that piece of paper. That it's a PDF, you can find it very easily, and I can post a link, it's a Bitcoin paper. And the name of the author on that with no affiliation is Satoshi Nakamoto. Who's this Satoshi Nakamoto? We don't know yet. Or maybe we'll never know. And it's a paper that contains a design of a cryptocurrency or the whole concept, and everything is in there. It's been thought out completely, and somehow it never got published. But people started building software to do exactly what this paper says. And then suddenly these numbers became valuable. Because people decide what is valuable or not. Okay, so what I'm going to do is go into the details of how can we do this and how can we actually transact business with it? I mean, I can come up, let's say I could come up with a number like this, and I give it to you, you give me money, how do you know I'm not double spending, I'm giving it to everybody? That'll immediately get its value down to zero. Okay? So one way is to have some trusted party who somehow obtains money and gives it to Alice because Alice gives Trent something, and then Alice gives it to Bob. Bob has to now take it back to Trent. Trent can check that this has been done only once, but then Alice might be cheating. There's a whole, but the point is not how to do this, but the point is you need Trent. We don't want Trent. This is how pretty much the banking system works. This is pretty much how governments have currencies. And if you do not want this government entity in there and make it peer-to-peer, the whole scenario changes. You can't do this. Okay? So there are two things. These are the terms you'll hear whenever anybody discusses Bitcoin. Bitcoin, the word Bitcoin, or cryptocurrency, applies to any cryptocurrency. It is a number that hashes to a hash that is below a threshold. Blockchain, something that's a miraculous technology, it's not. It's just a chain of hashes. And these hashes are also signed, so there's some kind of public keys involved. And there's something called proof of work, which we'll come to later. That says that in order to do a blockchain, somebody has to be put in some amount of work, and this work should be provable that somebody's done this. Okay. Now how do we... The problem explaining, even the paper is kind of hard to read because there's a lot of cyclical things going on. And I always have trouble explaining this. That is, Bitcoin, although I defined it as just a number, it's a little more than that. It is a block of a transaction log, and a transaction log comes from a blockchain, and a blockchain is composed of Bitcoins. So which one do you get into? So, to break that, mining is an operation. The word mining comes from the following scenario. You know, once upon a time, or even today, gold is considered a valuable thing. Why? Let's not worry about that. It is. So how do you get gold? You get gold by mining. So if you go around somewhere on earth and find some deposit of gold, you've just earned some money. So anybody can do that. And once you get to get it out of the ground, you can show it to people and they can run a test on it and they can tell you, say that this is really gold. And if it's really gold, You can sell it, you can barter it, that's worth money. So can we create mathematically something similar to gold? And if you can find it, it's just like mining for gold. Secondly, this is the part that people kind of don't like. It is, Bitcoin is modeled after gold. That is, how much gold is there on Earth? I mean, interplanetary travel, we don't know yet. But how much gold is there on Earth? I don't think we really know, but whatever it is, it's finite and it's not huge. Okay? So, something modeled after gold, these numbers, there should be a finite number of bitcoins ever, and that's it. So there's a finite number. We actually know the number. I think it's 21 million or something, something very small. So there are 21 billion. I think it's 21 million. You can look that up. The total number of bitcoins possible. No, we haven't found them all. But if you find one, it's one of these 21 million. Why is it 21 million? It is set by policy, not by math. They have a formula by which mining a Bitcoin becomes harder and harder the more Bitcoins are discovered. And as a result, exponentially, you cannot make more than 21 million Bitcoins. And that's a very small number in terms of money, so a Bitcoin to a dollar will not work. Its value will keep on increasing. Okay. So mining is the method of generating a Bitcoin. It's very difficult to generate a Bitcoin these days. Too many have been found. I think more than 80% or close to 90% has been mined already. So that supply is there. Finding a new one is hard. You take some data. This data is called a block. You attach a nonce to it. And you generate a hash. Okay? And you also put a pub key. Could be completely created, faked, whatever. And you put a signature on it. And this so ignore that data block. It could be any garbage data, but the circular reference is that data must be part of a blockchain. But that part is not important right now. I will take a part of a blockchain or whatever, and that will hash to something which will not be under a threshold. This hash has to be under threshold. I control the hash by changing the nonce. When I hash the blockchain with all zeros in the nonce field, I'll get a hash that's not below the threshold. It'll be some number. So I keep on changing the nonce until I get a number below the blockchain. And then once I got that, I sign the blockchain by having a key pair. This key pair is not authenticated. I can cook up a key pair. The only way I can prove that I did it is by having the private key of this key pair. And the moment I sign it, I make it public. And the way to make it public is a Bitcoin network, which I will come to right now. Once you make it public, you own that Bitcoin. And you're pretty much guaranteed nobody's made this Bitcoin before. Although when you make it public, somebody will check to see if this hash has been used before to generate a Bitcoin. So each hash is a unique Bitcoin as long as it's unique. If the hash has already been used, then you've just found a Bitcoin that somebody else has found. Bad luck to you. So that's the process of mining. There's a little bit more to it. Yeah. Forking on a blockchain is a optimization method. Let's not talk about that. Okay, I might say some things, but a blockchain is supposed to be straight, but sometimes it forks out because two miners come up with two miners get two bitcoins out of the same block, and that's forking, but that's not a relevant thing in this design. It happens, so as I said, it's kind of well thought of. That is, the possibility of a fork has been computed, and there are algorithms to take care of forks. So, but the basic concept doesn't have any forks. So now we have a Bitcoin. And now I can use this Bitcoin to do something. But then this has to have value. So that's a money politics issue. Why does this have value? Any more questions on this? Then comes the transaction problem. If I want to give this Bitcoin to somebody because I just created a brand new Bitcoin, it has been verified to be a brand new Bitcoin. Who did the verification? Okay. I want to spend it. How are you going to stop me from spending it with two complete strangers without... I'll do that because these things have value. So we need to stop double spending. Okay. This is what goes on in a Bitcoin transaction. Alice has the Bitcoin B, that block. Bob has a public-private key pair. Alice wants to pay Bob. Alice asks Bob for a public key. Now, that public key is not verified or authenticated. You give me a public key, I trust it just because. It could be a man in the middle also. So you've got to give it to me securely. I don't care whose public key it is. I make up a transaction log which has the blockchain, and the public key of Bob and signature of Alice. The private key of Alice is used for the signature, and the public key of Alice is in B. And then I put it in a database. Now, this has to be a very trusted database. This doesn't exist. But that will be replaced by a blockchain. But Alice didn't give Bob anything. Well, this database is not only secure, but it's public. It's not a secret database. Bob can check whether Alice has deposited the money. Okay? So since this is public, anybody can see that Alice no longer possesses B. Alice has handed over the rights to B to whoever's public key this is. And now B belongs to anybody with this public key. So next time Bob tries to give it to somebody, he will do the same thing, and this database will verify that you obtained a Bitcoin that you're passing out. And if Alice tries to spend the same Bitcoin again, we can check that the same Bitcoin is being sent by Alice to somebody else that will be caught if there's a central database and a person who checks everything. So this thing and more. So this blockchain, which I haven't said what is it, essentially it's a database. It is a database which provides certain services. So let's say I have a database which contains every transaction made with bitcoins. Initially what happened, kind of somebody created bitcoins out of thin air. And that's seeding the system. And that's when bitcoins weren't worth anything, so we could just put a bunch of numbers and transactions in a database. Then this database contains every transaction ever done with bitcoins. Now, every transaction contains a destination public key, and that Bitcoin is owned by that destination. So now, every Bitcoin and who owns it is in this database. So a spending of a Bitcoin must be done by its owner. And when the owner spends the Bitcoin gets to a new owner, and the old owner doesn't have it anymore. Trouble is to figure out how to build this database. Okay? So far, does it make sense? So let's look at this transaction log again. Okay, we don't know where this transaction log is kept yet. But the transaction log would be a sequential, kind of like a timestamp log of linked hashes where, okay, the initial hash should be, T1 has the from to and signature, that's the Bitcoin, and the Bitcoin value also. I mean, not the value, Bitcoin number. This is Bitcoin, and this could be Bitcoin 2, this could be Bitcoin 3. So here we have the Bitcoin from, it's already in the Bitcoin, 2 is the public key of the recipient, signature must be the signature of from person, and this was sent to me, the maintainer of the database. I take the hash of this whole thing, I take this initial hash, and I combine these two to generate a new hash, and I hash it here. And then I keep doing this. So I create a hash chain of transactions. And the reason I'm doing that is I cannot put in a new hash, a new transaction in between any of these two transactions. Once this chain is done, it cannot be manipulated. It's like that linked timestamp, but there's not really timestamp. There is an order. So obviously this T2 happened after T1. And so if T1 is a Bitcoin transaction from Alice to Bob, and T2 is a Bitcoin transaction from Alice using the same Bitcoin to Carol, this would be a fraudulent, and we can detect that. And this will not be in here. So whatever happened first, now what is this happened first? Alice can simultaneously spend twice, but one of them will get rejected. Okay, transaction log, it's not clear who manages. If this was managed by an important trusted person, then this would work. But there is no important trusted person. So we got to fix that problem. So now we say that instead of having one trusted person, I create a huge number of trusted people who maintain this Bitcoin log. And each node here has to maintain the exact same log in the exact same order. And so if I'm running a node in the Bitcoin network, I get transactions, I verify them, I put it in my log. And anybody can ask me for the chain of transactions I have at any point in time. So I will get caught if I'm cheating and all that, so that's kind of peer-to-peer. So we say that when Alice gives to Bob, Alice generates a transaction, So spending of a Bitcoin is only done by Alice. There's no involvement from Bob. Alice generates a transaction, broadcasts it to all members of the Bitcoin thing. Everybody who puts it in their log in the correct order. Now, what is this order? So that is a little bit of a time stamping thing. Do two people get the same log in the same time, etc.? There is a way of figuring out which one happened first. And since they all put it in, they all accept the thing. Alice waits for a certain number of accepts, and the transaction is now committed. And it cannot be undone. Alice cannot say, I want the money back now, I changed my mind. It's like giving somebody cash, the other person puts it in his pocket, and that's it. You have no way of reversing this transaction. So it's given, and Bob doesn't even know what's going on, but Bob can check like anybody, where is this Bitcoin? And it says it's with Bob now. But still we have some problems with this peer-based. How do they make sure everything is consistent? So it's a lot of work. But they coordinate at each step as to who has put it in which order. So there has to be a lot of communication here. So this accept takes a while for the network to figure out where am I putting this transaction, which is the correct ordering. And there's majority voting in that. So if we can solve it by just having transaction numbers. So Alice asks for a transaction number, gets it, sends it out, and if Alice is wrong or has spoofed the number, the Bitcoin network will reject it. And a rejected transaction, nothing happens, it just goes away. Only accepted transactions move Bitcoins. So the network consists of nodes, and they are all collecting transactions. At some point in time, determined by how many transactions are over by now, which happens very quickly, a network node can take this log and put it together into a block and call it a block. And then, this is optional, it tries to do this nonce and generate a new Bitcoin. And that generating a new Bitcoin is a lot of work, may not even be possible. Of course it's possible, because that hash value has to exist. And not all of them have been used up. So he generates a new Bitcoin and broadcasts it to the network. And that's how, and this is also called proof of work is broadcasting a new Bitcoin to the network. Proof of work, it means that this new Bitcoin that I've generated obviously took me a huge amount of work. Here are the set of transactions you can check that they have happened. So I'm not creating things out of thin air. I've got a block of transactions. Everybody has the same block. I took this block and I created a nonce, found a nonce that hashes to a number below the threshold. And the moment I show you this, you will be convinced that I did a lot of work to do that. And hence, my reward is I got a new Bitcoin, which is worth whatever the currency markets decide it's worth. Yeah. You cannot.
You are transferring the part of the fraction of the Bitcoin also.
So you're talking about breaking a Bitcoin into pieces?
Yeah.
We haven't gotten there yet. Yeah. So right now I'm transacting entire Bitcoins. So this Bitcoin now goes in, this Bitcoin block now goes into a transaction and becomes a new Bitcoin, and these blocks together is also called a blockchain. So blockchain means transaction log as well as chain of blocks. And yes, now there is forking, there is Merkle trees, there is splitting, there is privacy, there's a whole bunch of things, but this is it. This is the basic technology of how it works. But there is nothing, no fancy cryptographic protocol. It's still hashing random numbers and public key signatures. That's all. So I'm sure there are things that I've talked about which is not very clear. So go ahead and ask me. How can you not cheat? How can you do this? You do need a peer network. There is something called the 51% attack. If somebody is more powerful than half the people in this network, they can fake the whole log. But that's considered to be not feasible in the sense, if you have that much power, you're better off creating new bitcoins than trying to defraud the system. The paper is thought about through. They actually talk about how much work it will be in defrauding the system and what will be the value of creating bitcoins, and statistically showing that it's more expensive to cheat. You might as well make money honestly. And make money, you're making money out of thin air by just working. But that's not a new concept. That's how we make money. We work. Okay, to stop for a minute and think about why would this blockchain be fantastic technology to be used for keeping records and keeping people honest? Is it true? Can I use it for something other than Bitcoin? That's what is hyped, that it's wonderful stuff. But really? Who's going to maintain? What kind of applications would you use a blockchain? Yeah.
Now, there's like a big hype about social media.
Yeah.
Storing like all the information you sign up, and storing all your personal data.
Storing all your personal data in a public forum.
Yeah.
I mean, your personal data will be public, so you might as well put it on a website or something.
Yeah. What? Website. If you choose to take your account off the website, all you pretty much do is give limit access to your
There's no limiting access in Bitcoin blockchains. You can say my data, you can put a record saying my data is being deleted, but your data is still there.
I think the idea that I read from the paper was that everyone has their own blockchain that they give access to social media sites to, and your own blockchain has all your own personal.
But you can do anything with your own blockchain. That's called a database. So it's got nothing to do with the blockchain. Blockchain has to be publicly verifiable and so there is something called a private blockchain and a public blockchain. Private blockchain is a joke. Only blockchains that work are public blockchains because they can be verified. I can say I have a private blockchain. You want data, I'll give you data. That's like a database. And you're better off using a database, a file, an Excel spreadsheet, or whatever it is. Much cheaper, much more understandable than a private blockchain. Or company records, all business transactions of a company. How is it done today? It's on an SQL database. What's wrong with that? The company can manipulate. Let's do it to a blockchain. So everything is now in this huge hash format, which the company can change anyway. So why can't any people change these blockchains for cryptocurrency? Because real money supposedly is being transferred between these things and everybody is verifying these transactions. You cannot change anything because there's a whole bunch of peers. Can we put any kind of records on a peer-to-peer system? Yes, you can. That's a public blockchain. But who's going to work for you? Where's the benefit of doing that? Yeah.
What about these contracts? So they are using these to make contracts and just...
It's not going too well, is it? The smart contracts?
Yeah, I mean, it's been hyped for like some years, but...
Yeah, but what? It's just another cryptocurrency. So there's Litecoin, Dogecoin, Ethereum is the cryptocurrency which says contracts. So the proof of work is the contract. So nothing new here. It's another cryptocurrency.
There's another dimension that you might have to worry about. I mean, if I'm sending money, traditionally if I'm sending money to someone, I want that transaction to be between me and the person I'm sending money to. So on the blockchain now that, you know...
Correct, privacy. Where is the privacy?
Why must everyone know that?
Yes, almost everyone knows. So there is no privacy in Bitcoin. There is anonymity. Okay, we'll get to that topic. The reason why it works is that there's nothing private. If you send money to me, it's publicly stated that you've sent money to me and you cannot reuse that money because now it belongs to me. And the money is a number. And if you privately send me money, then you can privately send it to him and nobody would know you're double spending. So we have a blockchain composed of transaction blocks, blocks of transactions, which is a block, and this whole thing is chained together. And everything is public. This has been, so if you want to scale it, it goes on forever, and there's only one chain, so it's a huge bottleneck, and it gets very, very big. And so we should talk about how to collapse these chains, or maybe we'll talk about privacy. So if I look into this chain and look for all transactions with Alice's public key in it, I can find where Alice has been getting money, X, Y, and where Alice has been spending money. I can create a whole spreadsheet of Alice's transactions of how much she's bringing in, how much she's putting out. So there is no privacy or anonymity in there. So the Bitcoin designers say that no privacy, we cannot, you can do privacy or you can do honesty. Choose one. You can't have both. So there is no privacy. However, anonymity is different. So for every Bitcoin transaction, input and output, use one key pair. Key pairs can be generated on the fly. So now we can see somebody called Alice got one Bitcoin and gave it to Bob, and Alice now disappears forever. And that Alice is around, she's using a different identity to get money from Bob and give it to somebody else. So we don't know any correlation between, and even if somebody can find out because they shipped Alice television that she was using K1. By K1 I mean key pair 1. So this is key pair 1, this is key pair 2, this is key pair. No, that's key pair 1, that's key pair 2. And then Alice will use the key pair 2's private key to sign the outgoing one. Yeah, that'll be key pair 2. So every person does one input and output transaction and then disappears. That way you cannot trace who's doing what. Now this is going to be a big pain to maintain all these key pairs, but you've got to maintain it for as long as you have that money. Once you spend it, you can throw it out. But, one needs software. But most Bitcoin implementations give you a key pair and you use the same key pair, and then what happens is that if somebody steals your private key, it's all your money is in your wallet, except it's not in your pocket. Somebody steals your wallet, that money is gone forever, just like real cash or gold or whatever it is. So if I can get somebody's private key and that person has a certain amount of inflow transactions here, I can spend all that money. Or I can transfer it to an account that belongs to me, or I transfer it to hundreds of accounts that belong to me, but nobody knows who it belongs to. And that's not a problem anybody is even trying to solve. But using the same key pairs for hoarding money is a bad idea. So the claim is that this anonymity solves the privacy problem, even though everything is public. Okay? Splitting a Bitcoin is done by creating several versions of a Bitcoin with different serial numbers on it. Okay, let's do just two. Each Bitcoin can be split into two, and this Bitcoin can be further split into two. So you take the Bitcoin, you attach it serial number 1 and 2, or really 0 and 1, and then you give the 0th one to Bob, and the 1th one to yourself. And these are two transactions you're putting on the transaction log. Now the zero belongs to Bob and one belongs to me. I can do it thousands of ways. So there is a limit of, I don't remember, 2 to the power 56 or 64 or something like that. That's the number of parts a Bitcoin can have, because there's a part number field to the Bitcoin. And so we are tracking Bitcoins, not just the hash value and part number and signature on the transaction. And similar methods can be used to combine, that is, you get the Bitcoin from multiple sources. That's a little trickier. But splitting is done by taking the Bitcoin and cutting it into pieces, give somebody part of it, but moment you give, you have to return yourself the change. Yes, so there's more fields to the Bitcoin: section number, ID, who did it, how many pieces was made, and there's probably a variable number because the split can be split again. So that's all data structures. But that's not interesting in the sense it can be done. Whole Bitcoin trading, creation is done by whole Bitcoins, trading is done, well, let's say trading is done by whole Bitcoins, and how does it work with the blockchain is interesting. Blockchains are wonderful stuff for cryptocurrencies, not just Bitcoin. Any cryptocurrency will use a blockchain. Nothing else so far has used a blockchain, although everybody and his brother is building a blockchain. But it's what, 50... at least 10-year-old technology, maybe 15. In technology, if something is not used in 5 years, it's dead. But cryptocurrencies are alive very much. So is this all this legal? Look, the huge problem is people are playing around with numbers and sending numbers to each other. We've been doing that for a long time. It used to be called email, now it's called instant messaging, WhatsApp, this, that. We're just moving numbers around. This is the same thing. How can you make moving numbers around illegal? Or creating hash collisions? These are little fun games people play. That can't be made illegal. Who's controlling this? Nobody. Is there really money involved? Is this money fake money? Yeah. So what is real money? That's also fake money. It's created by banks, blessed by governments. It's just Hail Mary and all that. It's actually called fiat currency. That's a word that's used for all real currencies. Fiat currency means pretty much cooked up. So one could say that the real money is fake and the fake money is real. Okay, what else was there in the paper? Privacy, combining, splitting, forking. That's one thing I don't quite get, but forking is take the same block, two miners created two different bitcoins out of the same block. Okay? Can it happen? Very unlikely, but can. But if it happens, what do you do is the forking algorithm, and I didn't carefully look at this particular one as to how to handle that. And there is something else. Cheating, we just talked about. Oh, the Merkle tree. Merkle tree is a method of combining hashes. Okay, I will not get into Merkle. In a simple way, if you're transmitting data, you can build a tree and you can have the hash of this data, to combine the two hashes, get another hash, and up to the root. That root hash demonstrates what data is in there. That's a Merkle tree. So the use of Merkle tree in Bitcoin is that if a Bitcoin has been floating around for a while from person to person, you've got this whole log of transactions of this Bitcoin moving around. Why do we need to keep this? We just need the last transaction. So can you cut off things in the transaction log? No, you cannot. This whole thing has to be preserved. So if you can keep the transaction log as a Merkle tree, you can chop off all this data and just keep this hash. And you know this hash is correct because the root is publicly known. So it's not that obvious, but there is a technique of pruning the transaction log so that it's not as huge as all transactions ever has to be in that log. So it takes a while to understand what is a Merkle tree, why is it useful, and how to use it in Bitcoin transactions. Okay? So I focus more on the technology rather than the financial and monetary aspects of it, but that's how it should be.